this little
snippet.
Snippet.
I'm glad we're going to see it.
It's a CNN production, Christiana Amanpour, and it was made in 2009.
Oops, sorry, too loud.
Whose mission takes him from home in Washington, D.C. to Madrasa has been the dangerous frontier between Afghanistan and Pakistan.
They don't allow students to read newspapers. They don't allow them to watch television. They don't allow them to listen to the radio. So everything else is a third, fourth hand. And everything else that they hear is from the teachers.
Azhar is on the forefront of a battle to transform Pakistan's madrasas and bring them into the modern world. Many madrasas teach a version of Islam that is locked in the past. Students are rarely taught math or science. Some students had never even heard of Barack Obama, but they have been taught that America is the enemy.
Is the new president a friend of Pakistan or an enemy?
Azhar conducts secret workshops that offer the mullahs a more modern curriculum, and for those who've signed up, a chance to upgrade their image from extremist to moderate by teaching them a more tolerant form of Islam.
We do go into some of those verses of Quran by jihad, and if you take a part of the verse, of course it is very clear that what it says, but if you take the full verse, it just changes the meaning.
He gave our cameras exclusive access to a closed-door workshop with madrasa elders, like Mullah Fazlur Rahman.
He used to emphasize quite a bit to young students that they are under threat. So a very big part of his teaching was developing an identity in these young youth.
And now he teaches them what?
He says you should never fight. That should not be an option in your head as far as Islamic leader. A lot has changed. The limited thinking we had has been expanded and stretched.
The latest polls show the people of Pakistan have turned against the militant extremists and overwhelmingly support the government's full-scale war against the Taliban. Azhar says the demand for his workshops is now so high that he's received requests from 5,000 madrasas, and the local Taliban don't like what he's doing.
Have you had threats?
Yes. And our partners get threats all the time. If you go through these programs, they harm you or kill you.
Did this bug young hearts and minds? Azhar faces another hurdle. The US has targeted Al-Qaeda and the Taliban with unmanned drone attacks, but they've also killed innocent civilians.
I was talking to a madrasa leader in Fatah who said, actually your project was doing well, and we had a very hard time recruiting people to fight Americans. And after the drone attack, we have literally hundreds of fighters now.
Although most madrasas don't themselves provide military training, their students are easy targets for the recruiters. Azhar has seen them in action.
The insurgents come out in a prayer area, the students stand up and start screaming with excitement. It is just so organic that a teenage student is looking up to an insurgent. He wants to be like one.
Like this young Afghan militant studied in a madrasa and now calls himself Mullah Abdullah.
Because I'm a Muslim, I became a Taliban after the infidels occupied our country. When your country is occupied by force, jihad is an obligation.
I think in some ways we have forfeited the terrain to the Al-Qaeda's of the world, who are messaging to those young people in sharp and direct ways.
Ibu Patel, a Muslim who grew up in America feeling like an outsider, understands the path to extremism. He's now a White House advisor on Muslim youth.
It's not a question of them being ideologically attracted to the message of extremism. It's simply a question of that's where the jobs are, that's where the school is, that's where the free lunch program is. I think that one of the central issues of the 21st century is that we rise or fall on them rising or falling.
Shakirullah is one who has fallen. His madrasa education landed him behind.
My son didn't realize there were only 5 students in the school, and I was speaking there, and he sent me tomars. These are used in Baltistan, where Central Asia Institute is doing school, and they are put on a baby at birth, and they always wear them. Talking to people, they have heard 2 things, my son and Karen Rana, but they either are for warding off bad luck or keeping the child safe, and they always, always wear them. So would you please take one and remember the children in Baltistan as you look at them, or give it to someone to keep them safe. I also have here way more Journey of Hope. Karen Rano is the person who writes the stories, and the photographer is Minnesota, I think, St. Olaf grad. And I have way more than the people here. I'm not going to take them back with me, so please take as many as you want, and then I'll put you in charge of getting rid of the rest of them. Karen is an excellent writer, and this particular issue is mostly about Afghanistan.
How do you wear this?
They pin them on with a safety pin. Some of you may know that after years of working and building schools and having thousands of children in school, there was a program on CBS, Maligning My Son, the book, and I don't know how they heard about it in Pakistan, but a few months after that happened, they got a letter, and it said, "I am one of the girls on the cover of 3 Cups of Tea." I don't know which one it is, but I'm kind of guessing it might be the middle one, because she seems a little bolder than the others. She said, "If it hadn't been for the school built in my village, I would not have gone to school. And at my age now, when I have finished secondary school and will be going on to university," she said, "if the school hadn't been there, I would be married, I would have 3, 4, maybe 5 children, several of whom would have died." And she just wanted everyone to know how grateful she was that there was a school there for her. The story started in the village of Corfe when my son, Greg, was asked to build a school. And this, he was there in the warm season. When he asked about the school, they showed him an open field, and there sat the children with sticks doing multiplication tables in the dirt, and there wasn't any teacher. The teacher was in the next village. Corfe could only raise enough money to pay him every other day, and his pay was $1 a day. This is the winter school. Whole dug down dirt floors that's warmer than rock, and this is what it looks from the outside. A big heavy blanket was hung over that doorway, and the windows there have no glass on. It was cold, and they couldn't stay more than a couple of hours. And going back, you can see how close they sat together to stay a little warmer. Well, Greg promised them he'd build them a school, and he was raising money. It was going very slowly, and he came to River Falls, Wisconsin, where I was a principal, and showed slides and talked about how children there, how it was different from schooling here. And at the end of the day, one boy came and he said, I'm going to bring my piggy bank tomorrow and you can have the money to build the school. Well, then the children got excited about it and they decided to have a fundraiser. And student council said they would sponsor it. Then the faculty met and one wise first grade teacher said, let's have it be only pennies. If it's only pennies, the poorest child in school is going to be able to be as much a part of it as everyone else. And we had pennies for Pakistan. Greg had kind of forgotten about it. And 6 weeks, they brought in 6,320 some pennies, $632 all in pennies. That was the largest single gift he'd gotten up to that time, and he had written hundreds of letters to movie stars, football players. I don't know if he wrote to Seahawks players. only heard back from Tom Brokaw, who sent $100. And Tom said he has been getting it from his kids ever since, because it gets known that he was the only one who donated. It's also known he only sent $100, and he said his kids have really given him a hard time. But all of those people, the $632 was the single most he'd gotten from anyone. Not the rich, not the famous, but children. And that was the birth of Pennies for Peace. I get credit for it sometimes because it started in the school where I was principal, but it wasn't me.
I kind of like the title myself.
Yeah. It was those children, and it was the teacher who said pennies. And I have been so blessed to see what it does for children when they can be part of something beyond themselves. The kids in our country don't have very many chances to give. Two examples I like to talk about. One, I was in a school and a little boy in kindergarten came up to me and said, I didn't have any pennies, and we didn't have any pennies. So I took my dollar to the bank and bought some. And then he said, was that cheating? And I said, no, that wasn't cheating. And he said, well, what are they going to do with my 100 pennies? And I asked him, well, what would you like? And at that time, a penny would buy a pencil in Pakistan. It won't anymore. I think it's more like 2 cents now. But he looked and kind of looked up and he said, I'd like them to buy 100 pencils so 100 kids can write. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, here's a six-year-old feeling so empowered. Mm-hmm. And then I was at another school and spoke to them, and they had raised enough money to pay for a whole year for 8 children in primary school. And I got a letter from a little girl afterwards. She said, I was so sad to hear that there are 100 million children who don't get to go to school that I almost cried. But at least we're making 8 kids worth of a difference. And again, I could say, and there's story after story. So that's Pennies for Peace. Not 1 cent of pennies has ever gone for overhead. Every bit of it goes for supplies, teachers. They don't even build, except in a couple cases, build schools with it. But it goes all for supporting schools and children in schools. Almost $7 million has been raised throughout the world. Several years ago, Greg was speaking in Denver, and he mentioned it was on 6 continents. And there's a young woman there who was being deployed to Antarctica. So she had a pennies drive in Antarctica so he could say all 7 continents. It isn't only sometimes individual children, and they did get one letter from a man in prison in Florida and they had had a Pennies for Peace drive there. And he wrote in the letter how much it meant to him that he could give for someone beyond the prison walls. And then he ended with saying when he got out, he was really going to raise a lot of money. He was in for bank robbery. So they were a little bit. But with the Pennies and people hearing about it, there was enough money to start building a school in this first place of Corfe. Everyone
what year was this, Tereen?
20 years ago. 20 years ago. Last week I showed this when Paul Hinderle was there, here. And let me tell you the story about the man in front and then his remark. The man in front is the village imam. In that society, the imams do not do physical work. Someone else does their digging their garden, taking care of their irrigation canal, all of that. They are to study the Quran and to, in a village, a small village, to lead the call to prayer and to have the Friday message. This man, on top of being an imam, had polio when he was a child, and he walked with difficulty. The road had washed out, so the lumber they needed was 8 miles away, and the men got up during the night, walked the 8 miles, strapped on the lumber, and came back. And Paul said, look at the image of the cross. And here's a man in front carrying his cross because he said his role is going to change hugely. He won't be one of the few educated in the village, but there he is. And I hadn't thought of that, and I thought, what a striking image. And there's the first school. Most of the schools they build are for girls just simply because there are far fewer schools for girls. And in the area where this one was built in Baltistan, it's rather like Puerto Rico is for the United States. It's not really part of Pakistan. It is, and they oversee it, but very little money gets there. And the people there are not Pakistani, they're not from the area of India. They're Tibetans who came about 800 years ago, settled in that mountainous area, and speak an ancient Tibetan language. When I was in that village, the toilet, which was above the area where they keep the cattle in the winter, on one of the big beams there was a huge Buddhist prayer veil. So that would have to be at least 500 years old. And I thought if that would have been in the United States, it would have been a national shrine or something. But that's part of the history. And the people there are Shiite. About 80% of the people in Pakistan are Sunni. Then there's the small Shiite population and a few Christians. And in one area, the people have kept their old religion and their old ways. I was talking to in high school, as you probably know, alcohol is forbidden in Islam. But there are government liquor stores. If you are a foreigner, you can buy there. Or if you're a Christian in good standing and can get a letter from your priest, you can buy liquor in the stores. And for some people, that's kind of a nice side business to buy and resell. This picture was taken in Corfu just last year, and I had to laugh because they went from their what they were wearing before to some kind of school uniform, and the boys now wear shirts and ties. This is the school in Hushe on the first day of school. And in villages where there is no school at all and they build a new school, the village elders and the school council have to agree that they'll increase the number of girls by 10% a year. And if they don't, they won't get their teachers paid or get supplies. So they a little pressure on them to have girls. This is the first year. And then the second year, Greg said they must not have been teaching math very well, because this is the girls in the second year. The man way up in the left is Aslan. And for those of you who've read Stones into Schools, he's the one whose father sent him down the river on the goat skins. Aslan was the only really educated man in the village. He'd gone through 10th grade. And when you ask a man in that part of the country the proudest day of their life, they usually say the day my first son was born. Aslan had three daughters. His oldest daughter was a little above the age of the kids going to school, and he said, the day my two daughters got to go to school. The tall girl there got to go to school. Her mother was illiterate, and here she is today. Called doctor, she'd be like a nurse practitioner or a medical officer. The very first Balti person ever to attain the status to be called doctor. And she went back and has opened a clinic in the village very near her village, and is the only trained medical person for miles and miles around. And with that, the whole status of the village has come up, and the Italians, who have always been interested in climbing K2, they were some of the first climbers of K2. They took their bottles of wine with them, went up in +4s, and have been interested in that area ever since. They just built a hotel there. Tourist is way down right now because of all the troubles in Pakistan. But if conditions get better and the tourists start coming back to K2, the town will prosper better. And that's Nishma. This is Aziza. Aziza was in another village and had gone through primary school, which ends at 5th grade. And there weren't any other schools around, but she did walk to a middle school, or which was quite a ways away, but in 8th grade she was at the end of her road. And Greg just happened to go through her village, and she came to him and said, is there anything you can do for me? I've gone through 8th grade, but now I want to go on to school. Our family doesn't have any money. Is there any way you can help me? She became their first scholarship student, and she wanted to study maternal health care. Her mother had died in childbirth, as 5 to 25 women did every year in her village. She finished her training in 2000. 2000 to 2011, not a single woman died in childbirth in that whole village. This one woman made that much difference. So Greg said he learned to let the people take charge of what they were doing. He learned that women's education is so very important. And then he learned a lesson after the earthquake. This was in Azad, Kashmir. Zalzala is the Urdu name for earthquake, but they call that Kuyamat, the apocalypse. And you can see the devastation it caused. Well, Central Asia Institute wanted to do something, and as you can see, huge needs. So they decided what they would do is in some villages where there had been girls in school and they'd been displaced, maybe the best thing rather than start from scratch would be to provide something for these girls who had been in school already and were now, oh, this is USA. They flew all that in with the big helicopters. It looks kind of like Holden, I think.
Yeah.
They sent tents, and the people who were living in tent cities, a lot of different aid agencies, but the tents weren't fireproof, and they cook over open fire, so all the cooking had to take place outside. Well, this is one of the tents, and they built it, and the girls refused to go to school. They just wouldn't. They'd been in school, they'd liked school, they had nothing really much to do, and Greg went to the elders, and, well, they didn't know. He said maybe they were so traumatized they were afraid to go away from their mothers. So he talked to the women, and they said no, they went to get fuel and water, and the girls got together. Well, then this tallest girl came to him and said, we'll go to school if we have desks. The boys had desks. Very few boys died in the earthquake because they got under their desks. And when the roofs caved in, it was the little kids and the girls who died. So they built these kind of desks. Then they found out that a school means a desk. So even in some of the places where they're studying outside and don't have a school yet, they give them desks. And desks mean school. A lot of prestige. Then they, one of the men that works with them went to China and found this kind of design, earthquake proof. I think it will stand up to a 9.2 or something like that. And so they have built these kind of a better structure than just the tents, but still it's tent-like. And they are going to school. This is Karen Ranow, who wrote Journey of Hope. When she went over a few months ago, a friend of hers said, I want to send something for all the girls. Well, you know, you're limited in luggage. What do you send? And what she sent was those little ponytail things with the two things, 150 of them. Karen gave all the girls those ponytail clips. And her name in that village is now Pony. This was a classroom Greg found in Afghanistan, a bombed out personnel carrier, where the boys are studying English. And in that same place, this is where the girls were studying. Going back here, you'll see the boys are sitting there with the shoes on. It's you take off your shoes when you enter a home or a mosque, but look at what the girls have done. They're sitting outside on a carpet and out of respect for their teacher and that they're in school, they've taken their shoes off. I cried the first time I saw that picture. And the man who is teaching them was a Taliban. His mother told him he had to quit and that he should do something for his people. So he finished some schooling, went to teacher training, and now he is teaching girls. The last count I heard, there were 6 ex-Taliban. And Greg said, if you want to talk about brave people, these men are truly risking their lives to lead the Taliban and to be teaching in girls' school. Now, there is nothing, in fact, Islam says you should be educated. The very first word to in the Quran, in the revelation to the Prophet Muhammad, is Iqra, read. And the first 2 chapters talk about how everyone should seek knowledge, including daughters and sisters. I just put this picture in because the way the light is coming through the smoke hole, I think it's so beautiful. Studying Urdu, they have found many things happen when women become educated. Bangladesh, about 20 years ago, made a big push for everyone to have primary education. So it's kind of used to show what does happen. And what they found out is the birth rate goes down. Well, the girls don't get married as soon. But also the death rate for children goes down. The standard of living goes up. Farming practices improve. Children are healthier. Those same things don't happen if you educate a lot more boys. But it does with educating girls, and educated mothers make a big, big difference. I thought it was, there are several things that impede girls' education. One is just their safety. One, in Islamic countries, a lot of them don't like them to have male teachers, and there aren't enough female teachers. Or they feel the girls don't need school, they're just going to be mothers. Some families want to marry their daughters young, so they get the bride price. So there are many reasons, and yet as things go on, they can see there are many reasons that girls should be in school. One of the things they found makes a difference: if the latrines are so far apart that you can't see the boys from the girls or the girls from the boys, and then there's a huge dropout rate with girls when they start menstruating. I've said maybe the big thing we need to do is just see that there are plenty of feminine. And I was talking in the church I go to in Sioux Falls, and she said, oh, at our Necessities for Neighbors, that's one of the most popular things are tampons and pads. And I got to wondering how many girls from poor, poor families in this country don't go to school the days that they're menstruating and get so far behind that they just drop out. I've never really heard that, but I think it's something worth thinking about.
You know, that kind of makes me think about the Diva Cup, because the Diva Cup is washable and reusable, and that could make a huge difference. It's a small investment for a long-term gain.
Mm-hmm.
That could revolutionize that situation.
Here and there, probably.
Yeah. Once people are introduced to it, I mean, you know, if it's not what you're used to, then it's a different thing. But if it's what you're taught, interesting.
Mm-hmm. I remember one of the things you've said in the past, too, that's unique about girls versus educating girls versus educating boys, is that the girls return to their village or their hometown or whatever, mm-hmm. and boys... You know,
boys go to the city, and girls. Living in Alaska, I found it interesting, is just the opposite.
Wow.
Because the boys still can hunt and fish. There's still something for them to do. So Alaska is kind of the opposite. The villages, the girls go to the city.
Doreen?
Yes.
What's their climate like?
It depends upon where you are. In Baltistan, where Greg started schools, it's cold. They have pretty harsh winters. Not as cold as Minnesota, but they have quite a bit of snow. It's semi-arid. So, and then in some of the lower places, it is hot. But most of the places they're building is pretty high altitudes. And this particular school is right on the edge of a huge lake that was formed by a landslide. This was just written on a wall, and it's by the founder of Pakistan. Pakistan spends a very, very low percentage of their national budget on education. The biggest thing is for the armed forces and fighting against India. If India and Pakistan, and it looks like maybe they are going to come to some kind of agreement, if that happens, and Pakistan can spend more money on education, it will really help. This is the lake that was formed by the landslide and wiped out the road. Here they're transporting a car on this little boat. And I put this picture in because this is where the road starts again. It kind of reminded me of Holden. You know, you go by boat to the place where the road starts again, and then you can transport.
Was that from the 2005 earthquake?
No.
Before that?
No, after that. Okay. After that. And it wasn't an earthquake-caused landslide. It was just a huge, huge landslide. And maybe it would be better if you're having that to just go by camel. They've started doing their own books with the CAI logo on it. It's much, much less expensive now that they can just get publish their own things there. That's Greg looking out the window, and I took that picture because you see he has a wild rose on his hat. I was so surprised when I was in the Karakoram Mountains. It's just covered with thyme, wild roses, potentilla, and spirea. And I certainly, you know, being an old Iowan, thought wild roses, state flower, that wild roses were just a U.S. thing. But those four things were all over. And at the time that I was there, the thyme must have just been at the stage, but just driving through the country, you could smell thyme everywhere. This, Karen Rano took the picture of the first time she ever saw a teacher teaching children in groups, rather than just sitting. And you'll notice there's even a girl in that group of boys. So I think that's quite exciting.
I do think the head covering is long traditional for them.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that like, yes.
Okay.
You will see in parts of Afghanistan in the Lahan corridor, for instance, fewer young girls with their head covered, but you'll also see more women in burqas, the full covering.
I And I associate burqas with the time of the Taliban, but maybe not. Was a burqa also part of traditional?
Yes, and actually, that burqa started in Saudi Arabia, where the wealthy women wore them, so the common people couldn't gaze upon them when they were out.
Hmm.
And that being a desert place with the hot sun, it was some covering, but it became a prestigious thing to wear the burqa. And now many, many people will say, no, it's Islamic, it's prescribed, and it isn't. I know I'm being a little facetious, but I say it's kind of like if you're Lutheran, you don't have to wear a Norwegian sweater to church on Christmas Eve. Another thing I noticed is the people have such great teeth, and it's such a difference from being in an Eskimo village where you see children even with their baby teeth just all rotting away.
And do you know why? Is it because of the diet, or?
I think it's because of a diet. I was at this Eskimo village with a woman, she's a little older than me even, and we were having prayer, and she ended hers with, "And please God, take the suckers out of those children's mouths." And they drink a lot of soda in the Eskimo villages, where it's unknown in the villages in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And the school. When Greg, the last time the whole family was there with him, Amira, who was 10 at the time, said there was something really wrong with all the schools. And Greg thought, you know, the schools, they didn't have playgrounds. So they have started putting in swings and slides. And a few years ago, in one of the schools near Kandahar, a group of men came with their Uzis and AK-47s, and they said, "We want to see the school." I can imagine how the head of the school felt about it. Couldn't say much. And then they laid down their guns, and they got on the swings. And these elders, I had the picture, but I don't know. And these elders were swinging on the swings, and after about an hour, the headmaster said, "Well, don't you want to come in and see the school?" And they said, "We've seen enough. We want a school in our village for girls with the playground." And these men were from Mullah Omar's ancestral village. And that school has been built. So, my solution for Afghanistan is swings and slides in every compound. And I emailed that to some cousins of mine, and one wrote back. He said, "You know, that's very interesting," because he was just reading a research study on young men in prison, and one thing almost all of them had in common is they had never had fun as children. Mm-hmm. So play is really important. And these are children in Afghanistan waiting for school and at an opening of a school. I mentioned it when I talked about a little bit about Islam, but again, in the hadith it says the ink of a scholar is holier than the blood of a martyr, and I think that's so important. I like to think if Jesus were giving the Sermon on the Mount now, "I was hungry and you fed me, I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink," maybe he would say, "I was illiterate and you taught me how to read." And I went over time.
We're good.
So, thank you very much. And
thank you, Jane.
It's very moving.
Can we go until 5:02? You may leave if you want. If you have any questions, I'm not going to talk anymore, but I'll try to answer questions.
Did you take these pictures?
No. Okay. Gray and Eric Johnson and Karen Rano took most of them. I was there for some of them, but I didn't take them.
Okay,
I'm not a good photographer.
You have traveled and seen some of these schools. And
I have not been in Afghanistan, and okay. I really want to go there, but I've been in Pakistan.
So how many schools has Central Asia Institute built?
Altogether, they've got about 200 projects. Some of them are women's literacy centers, especially in Kabul. They have centers for reading and mathematics, and great push from the women now computers. Oh, the one women's literacy center in Kabul a few years ago, some men in the Afghan army walked a couple of hours and asked if after hours they would open a school for them. The Afghan army was over 80% illiterate. That is changing now because as part of their army training, they are also getting literacy. But I had thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if the army would be going into this women's literacy center and the women would be teaching them how to read and write? I thought that would be so wonderful, but I think they have their own instructors now.
You mentioned this.
So there's about 200 projects, and they're not, at this time, they are building four schools in Tajikistan. And Greg said if he thought the red tape in Pakistan and Afghanistan was bad, he said you should see what it's like in an ex-Soviet Union country. But they are building four schools there, but not so much in the other areas because they're really trying to concentrate on scholarships so that eighth grade or secondary school doesn't have to be the end of the road for people. There are a couple of women in universities studying political science. They want to get in the legislature and make conditions better for women. Lots in nursing school, teaching, maternal health care. Several women in medical school now. Two studying engineering. So worlds have opened up for a lot of them. And it's going to make a big difference. I just heard on a C-SPAN, it was an interview with General McChrystal, and I think the interviewer was a little, not negative, but not that hopeful, and she asked him, was he optimistic, and he said yes. And the reason he was is because of the women, because of them getting educated, and because of the spirit. He sees them having, wanting conditions to be better. Greg has asked any number of women what they want. You know, better food, a nice house, a good husband. They say two things. I want my babies not to die, and I want my children to be educated. And these women are doing that, and that's what General McChrystal was saying. Now I do need to let you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.